Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
And Ireland still in possession. O'Driscoll, Sexton, Donoghue, Callaghan, Loughlin just won. First time O'Driscoll scores. And that is the record. Try number 25 in the Six Nations.
Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyEvent.ie. Lovely morning here in the capital. Look out at the blue skies and plenty coming up on the show as well. We'll be starting with headlines, but then it'll be the NFL, and we'll be catching up with Stephen O'Brien from the UKPackers.co.uk to recap on last week's action and to look ahead to this weekend's fixtures in the NFL. And he'll be giving us his ACCE for week 5 as well. And in racing, Dave Weldon will be here to preview this weekend's races and give us his lucky 15 for the week. And Ken will be joining us from Milton Keynes to recap on last week's stage 1 of the Snooker Championship League. Loads of rugby action coming up as well, and we'll be talking to Will Slattery, journalist for the Irish Independent and the Left Wing podcast, to get a preview of this week's action in the Pro 14, and he'll also give us his thoughts on Andy Farrell's selection for the Irish team ahead of their final game in the Six Nations at the end of this month. In football, Alan Cawley will be talking to us about that heartbreaking loss on Thursday night to Slovakia in the Euros, and of course it was disaster in the end for Ireland on penalties. But he will also be talking about Stephen Kenny's preparation for tonight's Nations League game against Wales and all the latest action from the domestic league too. And we have a major moment in sport, of course, this week. Thursday was the 5-year anniversary. Ireland reminisced back to one of the greatest sporting moments in Irish history. We look back at the 5-year anniversary of when Shane Long scored that goal at the Aviva Stadium against the world champions Germany. So we'd love to hear from you and hear your memories of that and where you were when Shane banged that one in the net past Neuer in that famous match. And as usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Well, as always now, as I said, I'm joined in studio here by Blaine for the papers. Morning, Blaine. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you getting on?
I'm not too bad at all. Very disappointed, I have to say, after Thursday. I was watching the build-up to the game, and Richie Sadler and the guys on giving us the preview, and I was very hopeful. I mean, they certainly made it feel like we were in with a great chance. There was a few missing from the Slovak team with COVID concerns. I know we had our own few COVID concerns as well, but there was a few missing for them. We felt they were a little bit weaker and that we might just catch them, and they thought we might get a 1-0 defeat. And even when it went to penalties, I was still very hopeful. So disappointing.
I think we were all very hopeful, Reg, when it went to penalties, because we probably all as a nation had a feeling. We were like, this is it, we're going to do it. And I don't know, when I saw us going into penalties, God love our players, they didn't look very confident, and I feel like Slovakia had much more of a oomph to get through on penalties. But as you said, Reg, it was a tough one to take, but there were some fantastic positives to the game. We definitely did play a lot better, probably one of our best away performances, I think, in Ireland in a long, long time. So you can see what Stephen Kenny is doing to this squad, and it's positives for the future anyway.
Yeah, and certainly afterwards, I felt there was a few people being critical, but that's always the way. But for the most part, it seemed to be that people were happy with the performance. They felt that, as you said, the style of play was impressive. We looked more open, we looked more coherent as a team, and it's very, very early days for Kenny, you know. I mean, he's only just starting, and I think people are willing to give him that little bit of time.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at it, Reg, it's been three games he's played with the Irish team. You have to look at it as well, the circumstances too. He hasn't been able to go over to England to actually watch his players play in the Premier League, to play in the Championship as well. So it's very, very tough for Stephen Kenny. So all we can do is hope for a good result this weekend against Wales in the Nations League.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, all right, to see how that goes. Hard to get their heads back in the game, I'd imagine, after the disappointment of Thursday, but it has to be done. Such a short turnaround. Maybe, as often is the case, it's just what they need, just to get that out of their memories, get on with the next game and get back out there playing, show what they can do. So hopefully we'll see that in that game against Wales. Good news for Bose as well, of course. They secured European football for the second season last night with that 3-0 win.
They did indeed, yeah. They bet the, unfortunately, the very out-of-form Cork City yesterday in a 3-0 win. And as you said, Reggie, they've gotten European football for the second consecutive season. So it's absolutely fantastic news for Bose. Bose have had a very, very good season. They have, when you look at, for example, the cash that they've brought in from the Matt Doherty transfer to Spurs, and now as well securing Europa League or Europe, yeah, exactly, European football for next season. It's great for Bose. It really, really is good for Irish football.
Yeah, things are going well at the moment. It's amazing to see how much Cork have fallen. We've spoken about it with Alan Cawley a lot. It really is difficult on them at the moment, wedged firmly to the bottom of the table and not looking good.
No.
Which is disappointing to see for a team who have been right up there all along. So hopefully they can find some way of turning that around. I see as well, Chris Hughton can't wait to take up his new job with Nottingham Forest. Of course, Newcastle and Norwich and Brighton boss appointed last Tuesday.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then Chris Hughton, he said that he's raring to go to take up this position in Nottingham Forest. And you have to look at the positives. The first thing he said was, I want to bring Nottingham Forest back to where they were, back to the Premier League. And I can really see it with Chris Hughton, because he did get a bad kind of run in Brighton, and he didn't really get the chance, unfortunately, because they just weren't on form when he left. And it's great now to see that he's back.
Yeah, he's a great manager. I think, you know, yeah. I've always felt he was a very good manager, and he never really gets the recognition that he should get. So hopefully he can go there. It's a tough task, there's no question about it. They're struggling a bit, but you know, hopefully he can get a good run of it and turn it around, and I'd like to see him doing well.
Absolutely.
What else you got there?
Well, we've got some rugby. We'll obviously be talking to Will Slattery later on today to talk about the Pro 14. But there's some good news for Ulster and Munster, as they have been cleared to play their respective Pro 14 game this weekend. Both teams have reported cases of COVID-19 this week. However, they'll still be allowed to play, which is great news.
Yeah, that's a very interesting. Like, you're kind of on tenterhooks all week as squads and teams to see whether or not games will go ahead. And all both teams with tests coming back positive and trying to retest and check all the players. It's really difficult for clubs and teams to try and plan at the moment, because you really don't know when this bolt from the blue, you can get sideswiped with a test or a link to a positive test. So the whole time you're trying to focus on a match on Saturday and worrying, like, will you get a last minute missile in from the side saying, yeah, you're test here on a Thursday night or something.
Absolutely.
The whole thing is abandoned.
And when is it, Reggie, too? Like, this is the thing, like, when someone, let's say a big player of a team is has gotten coronavirus, it's very tough to see when, you know, the game should be called off, or even, like, because you don't know. It kind of is an unfair advantage when there's big players, and you can see it even in the Premier League, when there's some big players like Sadio Mane for Liverpool, who had gotten COVID-19 and he had to sit out for 14 days. He had to quarantine. Yeah. And you look at it with the rugby as well. Like, if there's any big players for Leinster, Munster, Ulster, Connacht, and the rest of the teams, when is it when, you know, games should be called off for maybe unfair advantage?
Well, I guess never, because the reality is a player can get injured at the last minute as well, and it comes under that category to me. You know, if they're unlucky enough to pick up an injury or unlucky enough to pick up a positive test or a contact, well, then I suppose that's the way it is, and that's where your squad system comes into so much importance, that they're able to have enough players there to cover all these things. But you're right. I mean, you know, we've heard cases in the past of flu outbreaks in teams, and an entire team maybe being brought down with the flu, and then maybe they'll look at postponing a game. So in that case, yes, I would understand it. But for one or two players, I don't think that's ever going to happen. It's just going to be a case of get on with it, because the fixtures list is just too congested as it is.
That's it. Absolutely.
Yeah, Shane Lowry's doing great. He's saying that he wants to be flying the Irish flag this weekend and trying to bring things home for us, considering that the lads couldn't do it on Thursday night, as he's joint leader in the in Wentworth.
He is indeed. He's joint leader with English Matt Fitzpatrick in the BMW PGA Championships in Wentworth, which is just great, absolutely. And it's great to have him, as you said, Reggie, to be flying the Irish flag and even to just be mentioning, you know, we had an unfortunate result on Thursday, and I hopefully want to bring, you know, the passion back to Ireland and hopefully do this for Ireland, which is great, because Shane's been having some poor performances lately, and this is absolutely fantastic to be seeing him play well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's certainly doing well at the moment, and as you said, in the penultimate round heading in there, 12 under alongside Matt Fitzpatrick. Paul Harrington and Graham McDowell both doing well as well. They begin the day from one under par. I see as well, I'm reading there in the paper, Peter Keane, the Kerry football manager, his preference would have been for neutral venues for the remaining two rounds of the Alliance Football League, not having teams having to face really long journeys. And he basically saying that he's worried that the championship could be hanging on by a thread with different counties travelling. It's a very strange situation at the moment when we're seeing no inter-county travel and checkpoints all week and chaos on the roads and people giving out and all the stuff that's going on. It kind of is a little bit at odds at that when you're thinking about squads of teams travelling to play matches. The whole thing feels a little bit surreal.
Yeah, and it's a fair point nowadays from Peter that, as you said, even though we are all, as a country, in level 3, we all have the same restrictions. As you said, Reggie, we're not allowed to leave our own county, and it should have been almost like a bubble type of system where it's played in a neutral venue and we can continue the league, because I can see some stuff happening potentially that will call off a few games with more cases in certain counties, and unfortunately that team has travelled to that county, so they're going to have to quarantine, and it's very tough,
yeah,
isn't it?
So messy, so messy at the moment.
Yeah,
but you just hope that things will go ahead. And good news for, if they do go ahead, for the GA fans, of course, that they'll be able to watch all the intercounty GA games live. When the Alliance National Leagues return next weekend, the GAA announced on Friday that all non-televised games would be available live and on demand through GAA Go streaming platform at a cost of €5 per match, which I think is fantastic and great value when you look at what they're trying to do over in the Premier League, £15 for a match. But a fiver is good value for anybody to be able to watch their team perform, I think. So I'd have to give great credit to GAA for that one, and GAA Go streaming platform seems very affordable and a great way to keep tabs on your team.
Absolutely.
In tennis as well, Djokovic will play the King of the Clay, Nadal, in the French Open. He played a tough semi-final, 5 sets to try and get there, but another thriller set up for that one.
It's going to be a fantastic game, and that's the thing. Now Djokovic is up against the King of the Court, the man who rules the King of the
Clay.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Reggie. it's a very, very tough one, and I feel like Nadal, this is his time, and I feel like this is almost his final year, his final few tournaments to bow out at his very highest. And I feel like it's going to be a very great game, but I think it's going to be a very tough game for Djokovic, because Nadal is just a monster on clay court. And I feel like this is going to be his final tournament or his final year playing as a tennis player. And what a tournament to finish off is.
And what a matchup. Can't wait for that one. It's going to be absolutely amazing, French Open. So really looking forward to that one. Okay, that's the headlines for this morning. Time to turn our attention now to the NFL. Delighted as always to be joined by Stephen. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Not so bad, Reg. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks. Yeah, it's been a busy week, a great week. We were so close again last week, 3 out of 4. Panthers beating the Cardinals in a bit of an upset.
Yeah, they're annoying me, Reg. Yeah. I'm going to have to get a flight over to Atlantic and start handing out some flaps. It's so annoying. The Falcons did this to us, you know, a couple of weeks ago, where they were the team that they had 98% probability to win at the end of the game, and they keep bottled it in the fourth quarter. So I put them to bed. I was like, right, I'm not going near them anymore because they're annoying, even though I think they could potentially win this week. But anyway, so then we were going with the Panthers. The Panthers had lost Christian McCaffrey, which is a superstar running back, He gets a billion points a game. And also a quarterback then they have, Teddy Bridgewater, who's a bit of a story in himself, went to the Vikings, got a grisly injury, ended up getting traded, and he sort of bounced around the league. And so he came in for the Panthers. But again, like, the Panthers went into this game, Reg, 1-2. The Cardinals were looking really promising off a big performance on 2-1. And then the Panthers just took control of the game nice and early. Some good running stuff. Teddy Bridgewater looking really promising, which I'm happy for the guy, kind of, because he had a big injury. But he bust a racket. So, you know, I'm not going to get too excited for him. So, yeah, look, we're going for the 4-on-4 again this week at the end of the show. But, yeah, I'm not going anywhere near the Falcons for the rest of the season.
Fair enough.
That's it. I'm done.
Yeah, well, it's been frustrating us, but I'd say Tom Brady must be fairly frustrated as well. What was going on? A bit of a memory lapse, we'll call it.
Yeah, a bit of a senile moment. A bit of old age for the poor Tom Brady. Look, he's an older quarterback. He's very, very dependable, and it was a bit of a shock move when he went from the Patriots and went over to the Bucs. You know, all eyes are on Belichick to see can he do without Brady, and all eyes are on. It's like a really bad celebrity breakup, you know what I mean? Everyone kind of, they're in the gossip columns the whole time, and that's how it is with Tom Brady. So he goes to the Bucs. He gets criticised by Bruce Arians, his head coach, for making some interceptions in game one. And so then people are like, oh my God, they're at each other. But this is just a head scratcher. So Thursday Night Football, Tom Brady comes up against Nick Foles and with the Bears, who himself is after coming on because their quarterback got benched. So, you know, it's a bit of a drama. It's so dramatic. So they're sort of trading points. They're going back and forth. The game comes right down to the wire. It's the fourth quarter. There's less than 2 minutes left. Brady steps out onto the field. Now, he's come back in the fourth quarter and overtime 46 times in his career, which is just insane because he's been playing for so long. So he dinks and dunks his way down the field. But then, in sort of a brain fart moment, Reg, you're four downs to move the ball, right? That's fact. Yeah. And if you give it up on fourth down, in the fourth quarter late, well, then the other team just has to take a knee and they finish the game. So he has fourth down and he leathers the ball over the middle of the field and it falls dead. But Brady stays out and holds up his four fingers just to say, like, no, that was only third down. It's fourth down, right? We're on fourth down. So, like, he just throws the ball away at the end of the game and loses the game on his team. And he definitely forgot that it was fourth down. He thought he had a fifth down because he's Tom Brady. Why not? So he set out on the field already. And that was the thing. So after they asked Tom Brady about it, they said, did you forget? And he was like, no, I didn't forget, no. And he kind of avoided the question. Bruce Arians, who criticised them earlier in the season, came out and said, no, Tom knew. Reggie, Tom did not know. Yeah. He's holding up his fingers and he's staying out there as if to say, like, oh, this isn't fair. And then that's it. They lose the game. They're only 1 point behind. They were very close to field goal range. They didn't get it. So he has to get off the field. And does he go over to Nick Foles and shake hands at the end of the game? Nope. Just gets up, goes into the locker room, never goes over to Nick Foles. And the joke on around the internet now is that maybe he didn't realise it was the end of the game. He thought it was halftime or something. But yeah, just a really weird ending for a player who's been around so long. It's just no better.
Yeah, it's a very, very strange one, all right. You'd have to wonder, like, very easy, I suppose, to make a mistake at any level, but for him to kind of carry it on and then deny it, if it's, you can see there's pictures across the internet of him with the four fingers up and the confusion on his face.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it was a lapse of memory, as we'll say, and he probably should have taken it on the chin. But anyway, these things happen. Okay, what else? So head coach Bill O'Brien has been fired by the Houston Texans.
Yeah, my poor namesake. This was a guy, he was a divisive character though in Houston. So Bill O'Brien, he's one of the lads that comes from the Bill Belichick coaching tree. So again, all eyes are on this guy to see what he can do. He's been in Texas now for a while and had a lot of success there too. He brought in their quarterback Deshaun Watson and worked with him, but he was a bit of a tyrant apparently. And that's all well and good, Reg, and you'll know this from your years in professional sports. You can have a taskmaster of a coach who, you know, really hands it to his players and likes discipline and is really, really strict. And that's great, but if you start to lose, well, then it's very easy to lose the locker room because people don't believe in you anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with Bill O'Brien as well is in the NFL, you have a general manager. So he looks after, like, getting in players and wheeling and dealing, sort of Del Boy stuff. And then you have your head coach, and he should just look after the offensive, defensive, and special team side of the ball. And even then, with the likes of Belichick, you'll have a guy who will get good coaches underneath him. So it's just really man management. Whereas Bill O'Brien had kind of an iron fist in with the Texans, and he was the general manager and the head coach. And he started to do some really questionable stuff as general manager in recent years. Some of them was, there were stories going around that he didn't get along with people. One of those was a superstar wide receiver called DeAndre Hopkins, and he traded him to the Cardinals for seemingly nothing at the time, a couple of picks and David Johnson, and people, it was a real head scratcher. He also got rid of a guy called Jadeveon Clowney, who was a linebacker. He was just devastating, but he ended up getting rid of him as well about a year ago. So people are looking at him and going, what is this guy at? And that's all well and good if it works, Reg, and he's trading away players, and because there are salary cap implications. Mm-hmm. But apparently he had a bit of a bust-up with J.J. Watt. Now, J.J. Watt is that superstar defensive player for the Texans, and people say he is Houston personified because he raised something like $50 million for the city, you know, on a charity drive a year or two ago. So he's sort of a darling of it. So apparently Bill O'Brien, one of the defensive players, didn't show up. And so he kicked the defensive side of the ball off practice and said, right, you're not practicing, go away. And that annoyed the defensive players because they're like, why are we losing reps? Because you're trying to be, you know, Mr. Tough Guy. So he had a verbal spat with J.J. Watt. And this is what they pointed, but again, it's real gossip column stuff, is that that's when he lost the locker room. So once the players stop playing for you and then there's rumblings there, and also there's stories about backstabbing going on with the coach and staff and everything else. But in a pretty shock move, they fired him and they called all the players on a Zoom call. It was like, I think they gave them 40 minutes of a warning and they all got on out of errors and they were told, here's Bill O'Brien, he's going to say bye-bye now, and then he's gone, which is why I'm picking Houston to win this week, because it's always at a change of coach that they always play for the new guy and end up eking out the win. But they're 0-4 in the season. Which
now,
is
who
a shock
is the new guy? Who have they brought in?
Romeo Crennel, he's a guy, he's been around forever. So again, they're in good hands. You know, this is a guy, now he's had mixed success around the league, but certainly a very competent fella. And that's what these lads do. All of these head coaches, they always surround themselves with like lads who've bounced around the league for years. So he's interim, so they're going to have to hire a new head coach and a new GM because they've lost two now. But yeah, they should be in good hands. And they've got some great players there as well, Reg. And there'll be this sort of lighthearted mood. There's all of this behind the scenes stuff from players coming out and saying, I was actually relieved. I can't wait to go back to practice and see what the lads are saying about this. So for some players, it seems like no love lost, you know.
Okay, well, there'll be one to watch, all right. We'll have that probably in our ACA. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Before we move on, just again, there's a bit of worry about the league. I mean, there's more positive tests, no more than everything that's going on this side of the world. It's not under control over there either. Tests in Tennessee, also in the Jets. Is it only a matter of time before the season grinds to a halt, or what's the general feeling?
Yeah, I mean, that's my feeling for sure. And I'll tell you why, because the Jets, that subsequently came back, I think, last night, that was a false positive. So there's a bit of sigh of relief there. But they got a positive test. They sent everybody home and then they had to retest everybody again. But you see, the way they're dealing with it now, Reg, is that the league are very against having teams forfeit points because they see it as kind of unfair. It's not very competitive. It doesn't get TV viewer numbers if they just don't play. So they want the teams playing. They shut the Tennessee facility. But what they found out was that the Tennessee players were going and practicing privately at high schools, which was against their directive because they're not supposed to be mixing. So then they got annoyed about that. So what's going to happen here, Reg, is that we have bye weeks. Every team gets a bit of a rest because it's a, you know, contact sport. And Tennessee have already had their bye week and they sort of got around that game and they pushed the game from week 4 to week 7 against the Steelers, and that was fine. But when they start running out of bye weeks and when a team has had their bye week already or forced to have a bye week because, you know, teams are turning back positive, well, then you're at a dilemma then of what do you do? Do you give teams 4 or 5 bye weeks and just keep pushing the season sort of down the line? Or like what you and Blaine were talking about, you know, if your star player goes out, is that justification to not play the game? But you can't do that, which is what happened with the Patriots, right? So Cam Newton went out with coronavirus and didn't have to play the game and they lost. So then you're kind of thinking, is that what you do? So then the standard starts to go down. And then what happens is then you get a team like that who had a player who tested positive. And then you say, right, well, he can't play, but everybody else can. But then their test might not show up positive yet, but it will. And then you're just spreading it around the league, which is against everybody's best interest. So to be honest, Reg, I don't know what's going to happen. If they keep running out of bye weeks so that they can't keep shifting games around the schedule and stuff, I think what it might come down to is a reduced season. They'll give people a couple of weeks off and then bring them back, which means you can have a really bad team who has a good winning percentage because they come up against other really bad teams. And then they end up in the playoffs. And then the playoffs is pretty one-sided anyway. So look, there'll be a bit of an asterisk around the season, I think, anyway, because it's not going to be a pretty standard league. But again, it's more and more dodgy as the time goes on, as those bye weeks wind down.
Absolutely. Well, maybe Mr. Trump, he claims he has the cure. Maybe he'll be able to sort things
maybe
out.
Maybe he might tug out and play, right? You never know.
At this stage, he probably thinks he can. Aaron Rodgers is having one of the best seasons of his career, but he's not happy. He's been talking out and slamming the media about being unfairly treated, in particular on the Pat McAfee show. And is he right?
I think he is. You know, he gets a bad rep. This is a fella who he's been operating at such a high level for so long. And there's been stuff said about Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, that he had Mike McCarthy and then you know, he wasn't calling the right plays, and there was a fractious relationship there. And then the stuff in the media about Aaron Rodgers not getting along with his family and all this type of stuff. And then in Green Bay for so long, we had a guy called Dom Capers, who was the defensive coordinator, and he let us down because Aaron Rodgers would be putting up massive points, but the defense would crumble. So, like, there's all of this stuff, and so people kind of write him off. And with Green Bay being where it is, and it's not, you know, the sexy New Yorks and all this, like New England where people go on holidays and stuff, he's sort of not seen by sometimes in the mainstream media. They're so easy to write him off. So he's on the Pat McAfee show now. Pat McAfee was a punter for the Colts, and he's a real boozy guy, you know what I mean? He's just kind of like lad. So he has Aaron Rodgers on every Tuesday, and it's well worth a view. It's live on YouTube, it's free. And Aaron Rodgers is getting on, which is really uncharacteristic for him, because I put in a request to interview Aaron Rodgers for our podcast, and I've got some famous players on before, but for Aaron Rodgers, it's like his media PR team will contact his other team to contact his other team to contact him. There's so many barriers with this guy, but he's speaking really honestly now on the Pat McAfee show. So he's kind of taking shots. His line that came out that hit the news is that a down year for him was like a career year for other quarterbacks. And people were like, oh, I told you he was so smoke. But he is right. That's the thing. I mean, people talk about him like he's washed up, yeah, and the media write him off, when really he is absolutely fantastic. And Stephen A. Smith, for Pardon My Take, I think it's a show he's on. So he came out and just said that Aaron Rodgers is going to be really, he's underappreciated. And we see Patrick Mahomes, and he is the future. But Aaron Rodgers is having an absolutely fantastic season. So it's good to see Aaron Rodgers speak out against these things, because he never really gets a chance, because anything he does say is misconstrued. But now with the Pat McAfee show, he's able to say what he wants. Now, he said some pretty dodgy stuff, but even Bears fans who hate the Packers are saying that they like him now because of his candid nature on that show. But yeah, he's dead right. And again, people should be paying attention to the Green Bay Packers and supporting the Green Bay Packers, which has come to us, UK Packers.
Excellent stuff. Okay. Blaine, what have you got to go on there?
I just have a quick question, because obviously with us talking about the Green Bay Packers, you know, you look at their past coach, Mike McCarthy, and he's obviously now the head coach for the Cowboys. I just want to ask a question. What's going on with the Cowboys right now? I mean, they're in a division, and it's the only division that every single team is on a losing record, and none of them look like they want to even win the division. So what's happening at the moment? Is it down to the head coach, Mike McCarthy, or is it just the team?
It's, do you know what? It's one of those things, Blaine, isn't it? It's the individual games. If you look at every one of those games, it's just bananas, the stuff that's been going on, how the games have ended. Like Dak Prescott, for instance, what you want from your quarterback and from your offense is that they're high scoring, they're high octane, and they're getting points. And that's exactly what's happening with Dak Prescott. People, again, he's another quarterback that people write off and say, oh, he's useless, he's no good, he depends on Ezekiel Elliott and all this stuff. But they seem to be firing on all cylinders. I don't think we can pull it down to Mike McCarthy yet, but heads might have to roll here, because on the defensive side of the ball, it's not great stuff. And there's some really calamitous stuff as well when you sort of dig into each game. But, you know, I think it's gonna, the rope's going to get fairly short now for Mike McCarthy in Dallas as well, because they have big expectations. We all know the owner, Jerry Jones. Here's a guy who has a radio show and just about blast people on his team because he's one of these sort of fat cat rich owners. But I expect them to improve as the season goes on, because there's something about losing games in the fashion that they do, but still putting up the points that they do, unlike the Falcons, who are just crumbling late in games. I think that builds character with the Cowboys, and I expect them to make a stronger finish at the end of the season. They're not going to be world beaters. But Mike McCarthy, I mean, I witnessed him for years in Green Bay. He is a good coach, and he will institute a good system. It just does have a shelf life, but I think he just needs time.
Okay, well, let's get a look then at this week. You're being pretty conservative this week. You're trying to avoid any Panthers beating the Cardinal upsets. So what have we gone for in the ACA?
Right, going Pittsburgh Steelers to beat the Eagles. A slightly dodge, because the Steelers are off a bye and the Eagles are doing all right. I'm going for the Cowboys to beat the Giants. That's a lock, which means it's not going to come through, right? The Seattle Seahawks to beat the Minnesota Vikings. Again, I was going to go the opposite way on this game, just to be a contrarian and to get better odds, but sometimes better odds is less money. But again, that's the Seahawks to beat the Vikes. And then lastly, then the Houston Texans have a bounce back and get their first win against the Jacksonville Jags. It's only 2-1 odds, which is pretty low for a four-timer. But yeah, and there is some dodgy games you can flip them either way, but for luck, I'll stick to me guns this week with those.
Excellent stuff. Who have the Packers got this week?
On a bye week. So again, 4-0, and they're going to stay that way. So they can lose. Brilliant.
All right. Nice one. Okay. Well, look, we'll catch up with you again next week, Stephen. That's brilliant. Thanks a lot for that.
Indeed. Thanks, Reg.
Take care. Have a good weekend. That's Stephen O'Brien there, the UK Packers.co.uk. Great podcast for all you NFL fans. Covers everything, and it's not just the Packers. He's covering everything to do with the league and all the news and latest information that's coming on out of there. He's gone for Anaka this week. Returns about 2-1, but it's pretty locked in, according to himself. He's gone for the Steelers to beat the Philadelphia Eagles, Dallas Cowboys to win over the Giants, Seattle Seahawks to take the Minnesota Vikings, and Houston Texans to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars, as they have their new coach this week, and he reckons there'll be a bounce back. Time to turn our attention to horse racing now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Dave Weldon. Morning, Dave. How are you?
Not too bad, Reg. How's things?
Things are not too bad, is right. It's looking nice out there. So, decent bit of weather probably would help with any horse racing that's going on, but it's likely to change a little bit too, so it's a bit uncertain. But there's plenty of racing still going on, despite all these troubled times. Bit of racing going on in Limerick as well, and in the Curragh tomorrow, Fairy House, and plenty in the UK too. So, lots to talk about.
Yeah, it's the perfect time of the year in horse racing terms anyway, where kind of the end of the flat season is coming and there's big group ones to be decided and champion horses to be crowned, and then the start of the jumps is kicking into play. So you've some nice horses coming out and making their appearances, and all roads be leading to Cheltenham, and that'll fill up the column inches now over the next couple of weeks and stuff like that. And we'll have all the big trainers coming out with their horses to follow for the year, and the lads did a podcast yesterday for the race hour. We were talking about the novice chasers for the year and all that, so that's worth listening on all your good podcast platforms.
Excellent stuff. Looking forward to that. Give us the name of the podcast. Don't be shy, Race, Dave.
Race Hour. Dean Dermo and Paddy Aspel are on it yesterday, so we'll be looking at the weekend as well. So we'll have some tips there for people as well to listen to.
Stuff. Just so our listeners can check into that one for you. Okay, we're going to have a look at a Lucky 15 first of all. Where have you decided to go to this week?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a mixed bag. We've two over jumps at Chepstow, which is the start really of the UK jump season, and then we've two at Newmarket, which are Future Champions Day, they call it. Mm-hmm. And they have it on a Friday and on Saturday, whereas we have it on one weekend. So we started Chepstow in the 2:47. Paul Nichols got off to a flyer yesterday. I think he had four winners on the day. And he has won in the race number 3 on the card, Secret Investor, who's 3-1 or thereabouts. He was second to Native River at Newbury last year, and that form should see him well treated enough to win this race. Paul Nichols has won this race in the past, and Secret Investor runs off mark 1:43 and gets weighed from most of his rivals, and that should see him win at 3-1. Secret Investor in 2:47. Then in the 4:32, a horse called the Bay Birch, who used to be trained in Ireland, is now over in the UK. Goes really well at Chepstow. Had a pipe opener 3 weeks ago, and most of the other horses in this race have not had a run since. And at 11-4, I think he should win for the Shepherds there. And he won this race last year, and he's off a similar mark again this year. So the Bay Birds, number 10, and the 4:32 at Chepstow. Mm-hmm. And then we go over to Newmarket, and the 2:55 is probably the race of the weekend. It's the Dewhurst 2-year-old race for colts, and Chindit for Richard Hannon and Pat Dobbs is 3-1. He's 3 out of 3 so far. And the word on social media and stuff like that during the week for this horse was that he put in a piece of work last week that was amazing. It's one of the best pieces of work that's ever been seen by Richard Hannon and Pat Dobbs. And for them both to come out and say it before a race of this magnitude, like, this race would define a stallion's career. Like, this would set this horse up to make thousands of money at stallion before it even goes on to be a 3-year-old. For them to come out and say that, put added pressure on themselves, so I thought it was a big statement. And at 3-1, I think you can overturn the Joseph O'Brien favourite, Thunder Moon, and win this race for the Hannons.
Excellent stuff, yeah.
Chindit.
See it there, yep, no worries.
And then the last one of the Lucky 15 is 4:15, Newmarket, number 2, Mid Isle, for Jessica Harrington and Shane Foley. About the 11-4 chance. Was Group 1 winner on this card at 2, won the Phillies race. And then won a group three, in July at Mace. Drops in class here, has a bitten hand over the rivals. Now, she's a bit in and out, but I think if she puts her best foot forward, she'll take all the beating here on 11-4. It's worth, I think that's taken into the price, and that's a very fair price.
Wonderful. Okay, so there's no crazy outsiders there in any of those.
First time on the wire, Red, so I thought I'd go a bit safe and try and get a few winners in the bag.
No problem. I think that's a fairly good way of looking at things. Anything else from any of the other races across the board that you've seen that kind of jump out at you?
The Limerick National is on the Munster National was at Limerick on Sunday in memory of JT McNamara, who we all remember. Yeah. And there's a horse for Henny de Bromhead there called Walkaway. Now, he hasn't been missed in the market at all. He's 5-1 for a very competitive race. But if you look at some of his back form from last year, he was running in the races with the likes of Alaho and Faheen and stuff like that, and he was running them fairly close. And he gets in here off a light mark. So he should take all the beating for Henry de Bromhead. Excellent. And then just in a bit of other news, Robbie Power has decided to kind of split with Jessica Harrington for the winter. And he's come over to the UK to base himself with Colin Tizard. Basically, he would have done similar last year. He would have been over in the UK during the week and then back in Ireland for the weekend and stuff like that. But with COVID and all that and restrictions, he wouldn't be able to travel as much. So then decided that Colin Tizard had better horse this year in the UK. Now, it's gone off to a bit of a ropey start. He had a bad fall yesterday, and his three runners today have all been declared non-runners and all would have had a chance. But Colin Tizard had some good firepower for the year, so we would just work keeping an eye on Robbie Power.
And that's an interesting point with Robbie Power. I mean, across the board with jockeys and trainers and assistant trainers and stable hands and all, are you seeing much chopping and changing and movement because of, obviously, there just isn't as much racing as there was?
No. There's an example from yesterday. So Aidan O'Brien has a big team and he loves sending his horses over for these races because that's the operation, is to get stallions out of them and breeding. But in the big race yesterday, there was two horses, Snowfall and Mother Earth. And basically, because Aidan wasn't there and his usual team wasn't there, and he has a team based in the UK now, based full time for these races, the wrong number cloth was on the two horses. So they were both disqualified in the end.
Yeah.
And the two jockeys who wouldn't usually ride for Aidan were on, didn't know what horse they're supposed to ride, so they just went by the number cloth, so they've actually rode the wrong horse.
Right.
And one of them placed at 50-1, whereas it was declared a Snowfall won a place of 50-1, but it was actually Mother Earth. It was only some lad on Twitter with an eagle eye noticed that Mother Earth has a white sock and the horse Snowfall doesn't. The horse who finished third had a white sock.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So it's kind of a big story. You kind of broke late last night.
Yeah.
And the repercussions really aren't there yet. Aidan O'Brien came out and apologised and put his hands up like he wasn't there, so what more can he do? There's been a bit of that. And there was the breaking news last week where Aidan's horses couldn't run in the arc because of a problem with gain feed.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of been a bit of a... Racing has an awful habit of shooting itself in the foot. It kind of has over the last week or so.
Things like that don't help.
No, they don't. And then obviously you have Oisín Murphy, who's an Irishman as well, whose ban is kind of overhanging him at the moment. And then obviously you have Oisín Murphy, who's an Irishman as well, whose ban is kind of overhanging him at the moment. And he's champion jockey-elect in the UK. For drug use, which he denies, and it's over in France, which you remember the Robbie Downey story from a year or two back. France bottom line is kind of seems lower for testing purposes. Mm. So he's gone off to get hair samples and that's not showing things, so that looks like it's going to drag on a bit. So there's plenty going on, Reg, and plenty to keep us interested and distracted.
There usually is. Okay, well, that's great as always, Dave. Thanks a million for that. We have your lucky 15 there, and hopefully one or two of those will come in for us later on.
Please,
God. Thanks very much. That's Dave Welding there of the Racing Hour podcast, of course, giving us his lucky 15 for later on today. There's plenty going on in racing right across the board here in Ireland. You've got Limerick, the Curragh and Fairy House. He's decided to go to Chepstow and Newmarket, though, for the lucky 15. Unusual times, these, but at 2:47, the Secret Investor is at 3-1. In Chepstow, and then at 4:32 it's Bay Birch at 11-4. Then we go to Newmarket and it's the 2:55 Shindit at 3-1, and the 4:15 it's Mill Isle, the 11-4 that will be there. We'll give that out on Facebook as well. Delighted to be joined on the line now by our own Ken Doherty. Good morning, Ken, how are you?
Morning, Reg. Been listening to the Lucky 15. A bit unlucky last week, two winners, and of course Serendipity didn't run in the over in France, but fair play to Leon for a couple of winners last week.
I know, it was getting close there. We were kind of always hopeful, you know yourself.
I know. Well, they've come close a couple of times. Dave has given given a couple of winners over the time, of course, and Leon and our very own as well, Dean as well. Dean has given us some very, very close ones, so we'll get there, yeah, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So how's things over there? How are you getting on?
Yeah, devastated about Thursday. Were you? I mean, I was been watching it over here. Like, I just like had a bad feeling because they were all over them. I mean, they should have scored about 3 or 4 goals at one stage. But absolutely devastated. I thought, I mean, what surprised me with the penalty shootout? I didn't see McGoldrick take one. Why didn't Shane Long take one as well? Yeah. You know,
yeah.
Before I mean, Bourne. In all fairness, I mean, he should have scored at least 2 goals, you know. But he didn't look confident going up for that penalty. I don't think he should have been in the first 5 for sure, you know.
There was a few questions, and I mean, obviously everybody's an expert with hindsight, but they were wondering, would they have even been practicing for penalties? It didn't seem like there was a kind of a plan around it.
Yeah. I know. But, you know, with so much pressure, I can understand that. I mean, as they say, the walk up there is so lonely. You can imagine how heavy their legs were going up there. And there's so much pressure, you know, to get through. Of course, Northern Ireland got through. They would have been playing Northern Ireland in the next round. And Slovakia, you know, they weren't any better than us. We dominated a lot of the play and had so many of the better chances. That we should have, we could have easily won that match, you know, easily won that match and beat Northern Ireland as well, to be honest, you know.
I know, yeah.
But anyway, at least there's some grass shoots, some really nice grass shoots of improvement, and hopefully going forward that he'd be given the chance and build on that team.
I think there's every likelihood. I mean, there was a lot of people, I know we'll be talking to Alan later on in the show about it, but I know. You know, Alan was in particular talking about the fact that you got to give Stephen Kenny a chance. I mean, this is the third match. And I don't think, like, let's be honest about it. I mean, I suppose as Irish football fans, we're kind of a little bit wary about it. Before the game, they were saying there's a chance of a 1-0 win for Ireland because they've got a few injuries and all that kind of stuff. We were all going, oh, geez, there's a chance here. But deep down, people were probably thinking, yeah, but it's away from home and they're a good team. And realistically, do we think we can win it or whatever? So I suppose that there is positivity around it because people were saying, well, at least the performance was good. And like we did have chances, as you said, we should have scored 2 or 3. You know, so the performance was good.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, that one on the line, that Bourne, I think hit with his right foot. I mean, he should have smashed that, put his laces through it. And I mean, that would have been a goal.
You wouldn't have held back there, Ken.
I wouldn't have held back. I mean, in my 5-a-side down in Pembroke.
You would have been straight through that.
The back of the net and the defender with it as well. I would have given that a big toe poke, the biggest toe poke you would have ever seen.
Ken of the Rovers.
I love it.
I know it would have been just a class. You know, class way to finish off that.
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah, I felt sorry for the boys now, I must say, at the end. It's heartbreaking because you look forward to seeing them play, you know, in the European and playing in Ireland as well, you know, with hopefully good crowds as well.
Yeah.
That would have been something to look forward to, you know.
Well, I suppose with the game tonight against Wales, you know, there's a chance to redeem themselves or get back on the horse pretty quickly. It's always good.
It's going to be difficult though, isn't it, to raise your game, to get back up for it.
Yeah, it's always hard after a defeat so close on Thursday with the disappointment of it, but I suppose, you know, they might feel, well, look, it's a chance to get out there and show what we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think so, you know, and the best way to get over the disappointment is to put in another good performance and hopefully get a result against Wales. But that's going to be a tough match as well against Wales. They've got some really good players. Giggs has been doing very well with them, so it's going to be a really good test for them, you know. But no better time to get back up on the horse and try and forget about what's happened, you know. But it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, no question. It's not going to be easy. Yeah. Very quickly with the Premier League, your own beloved United. Give me your quick thoughts at the moment.
Oh, terrible! I mean, Cavani. You know, they brought in some players. The big one was obviously Sancho not getting Sancho. Yeah. That's a very big disappointment for Man United fans. I mean, that, you know, for all those players that they got, and they got Sancho, like with Fernandes as well last summer, they hemmed and hawed, eventually got him in January. But had they got him in the summer, it would have improved the team by at least 15 or 16 points.
Yeah.
Not getting Sancho is a big loss, you know, and it shows you sort of where Man United are.
particularly in the transfer market, and with the money and the Glazers and stuff like that, they're not willing to spend
to do it.
Spend the big money. Yeah, Cavani is a bit of a, like, it could be like an Ibrahimovic, so I don't mind, because he's class.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a class player, Cavani. You know, I know he's 33, but he could bring a lot to that front line.
Last week was, of course, the Champions League snooker going on, and there was a few matches finished up on that to recap on.
Yeah, yeah, the Championship League finishes, so they won't be coming back now till the 26th. We started off with 128 players, 32 groups, 32 winners back for the next stage. That will be on October the 26th. And some good names in there as well. Judd Trump is in there, the world number one. John Higgins, four-time world champion. Mark Selby, three-time world champion. Sean Murphy is in there. Ronnie O'Sullivan, the six-time world champion. He didn't play in it, so he's not around, but... there are lots of great players still left in it, and then there's me.
Yeah, and you're there too. Don't leave yourself out. One-time world champion. Let's not forget that. Okay.
Yeah, looking forward to it. We have the big tournament now, of course, this week, which is the English Open.
Yeah.
That starts on Monday. That'll be on Eurosport. That'll run right till next Sunday. So over here, practicing, larger than Jimmy White's house at the moment. He's not here. He's got out to watch his grandson play football. But I've been practicing with him here every day, and the both of us are travelling up to get tested, of course, because all the players are tested. And they've been very successful, in all fairness. I mean, there was two positive tests at the European Open, unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago. But that's only two out of a possible over 2,000 tests that they've done since the summer, which is not a bad return.
Absolutely, it is not.
Yeah, yeah.
You take on Juzi in your first match. That's on Monday, is it?
Yeah, Monday, 11 o'clock. Yeah, young Chinese boy who plays up in the Ding Junhui Snooker Academy. Mm-hmm. So one of the Chinese boys. Of course, Fergal O'Brien will be in it as well. Aaron Hill, who did really well beating Ronnie O'Sullivan in the European a couple of weeks ago. He will be in it as well. And, of course, Sean Murphy, who now resides in Dublin. He will be playing in the European as well. So there's lots there to cheer on for the Irish.
I didn't realise Sean had moved to Dublin.
Yeah, married a Dublin girl in England. She lives up in from Dundrum, Ballinteer way. And so he's moved over lock, stock and barrel over to Dublin and plays out of the Stephen's Green Club as well. So good, another good practice partner to have.
Absolutely, yeah. They're building up a nice stable. So, like, it's a huge field in this English Open. I mean, it's 128 players again. And, I suppose it is a very prestigious event. We'll just have a look back at the magic moment in sport, of course. This week saw the 5-year anniversary of one of the greatest sporting moments in Irish history as... A result on this week's Major Moment of Sport, we're celebrating the 5-year anniversary of when Shane Long rocked the whole island of Ireland. Shane managing to score that goal, of course, against Germany and in the Aviva Stadium, the 8th of October 2015. The Irish national team had hosted Germany for that. The German squad had been crowned champions of the world when they won the World Cup the previous year. And the match was one of the most crucial games in Ireland's journey to qualify for Euro 2016. Germany dominated the majority of the match, but on the 70th minute, Irish goalkeeper Darren Randolph saw the perfect opportunity to lob the ball to Shane Long, in which he slotted the ball past Manuel Neuer in the German net, and the scenes in the Aviva Stadium were like no other. Let's have a quick listen back to that moment.
This is Royce, danger from the break. He was aware though that Schürrle might have been offside, so delayed the pass to him. Walters coming back from an offside position, but Shane Long was definitely onside. Shane Long!
Yes, that magic moment, of course, well remembered by everybody 5 years ago. It was a quick 5 years, no doubt about it. And of course, that led to us eventually qualifying and having a disappointing run out in the end in 2016 as we went out to France with the that famous game, going out 2-1 to that one. But you remember it well yourself, Glenn.
Oh, I absolutely do indeed, because I was there. I was, Reg. It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I remember it was like last minute getting tickets to my friends. I was like, listen, will we go to the Germany game? And I was like, like, oh, there's just no hope we're going to win this game. Not a chance. These are guys are the current world champions. Like, you look at their team, they had like Ozil, Goetze, all the lads who literally were first team playing in the World Cup the previous year. Mm. And I was like, this isn't going to be great. And we were dominated for the whole game, absolutely for the entire game. And I think it was like almost like 75% possession for Germany, 25% for Ireland. And, you know, I always thought the funny thing was, is that Randolph, who assisted Shane Long, and even Shane Long himself, never started the game.
Yeah.
It was both Shea Given who started in goal, and it was Daryl Murphy who was on. And both of them came on, and then, you know, that's it. It was history.
I always remember the speed of that. Like, I remember the ball well. There was a little bit of fortune in it. Kind of came off Shane's left shin, I think it was, and just bobbled nicely for him back out in front of his feet again. But the finish was unbelievable. It was a bullet to the top left-hand corner. Noir had no chance of getting his hand anywhere near it. It really was a class strike. And, you know, the speed of him running onto that ball and getting past it, he kind of went between the two defenders and outran them and just, you know, rocketed it home. It was an amazing thing, all right. And but then I remember the next 20 minutes were the longest 20 minutes in history.
Oh, stop, exactly. It felt like it was almost going to extra time. We played like over 120 minutes of football then.
No, it was an absolute nightmare. Ken, you'd remember it well, of course, as well, that famous Shane Long. We're jumping all around the place with you, but we dropped the line to you there. But you'd remember Shane's goal well.
I do indeed, yeah. What a magnificent strike it was. And as Blaine said there, I mean, the possession that Germany had, but, you know, that was a typical Irish performance, you know, gritty, determination, and it reminded me a lot of the goal that I think Robbie Keane scored. I remember as well against the Germans a long time ago. But what a magnificent time to score for Shane Long, and he'll always be remembered for that brilliant goal against the world champions West Germany.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that is our magic moment for this week. Remembering 5 years, quick 5 years since Shane Long scored that goal for Ireland against Germany. Okay, back to the snooker. Before the break there, we were just talking about you know, all the qualifications, the fact that you've got Zheng Zi, and the prestige of the English Open.
Yeah, it is a very prestigious tournament. One of the home nation events, of course, the English, the Welsh, Northern Irish and the Scottish. And I think the bonus still exists, that if you win all four, you get £1 million pounds bonus. I think that still exists for this year as well. That was a bonus that Barry Hearn put up. I mean, it's almost inconceivable that somebody could do it, because their best is seven. So to win the four of them would be very, very difficult. Yeah. But it's still a nice little dangling carrot. But yeah, it's a very prestigious event. It'll be live on Eurosport. 128 players competing. And I'm sure Ronnie O'Sullivan, if he doesn't pull out of this one, will be in it as well.
Yeah.
But you'll have Mark Selby. You'll have all the top players will be in it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, he's down to play against Brian Ajoyski, so hopefully that is the case, that will happen. Yeah, so I suppose... like the way things are going at the moment, I mean, like you mentioned, there's huge names there, like Selby
Yeah, but I think the great thing for us from a snooker point of view, Reg, that held, you know, I was listening to Dave Weldon about the problems in horse racing, the problems in the NFL with the spread of coronavirus as well. And, I mean, it's the same in snooker. As I said, we've only had two positive tests, two players, and of course, two players who were in close contact. So there was four players had to leave. But there's very stringent measures with the testing. You know, as I said, we've got to go up for a test now tomorrow and then wait until the next day or possibly that night to get the results back. But it's very efficient. You know, the social distancing rules are well kept. You know, you've got the hand sanitizers at almost every other stop within the building as well. And sort of you're in a small little bubble there as well. Yeah. It's perfect in Milton Keynes. It's where the MK Dons play.
Yeah,
and they have a wonderful stadium. I don't know whether you've seen pictures of it on the social media yet, but it's a beautiful 30,000-seater stadium. They have a DoubleTree Hilton Hotel there. That's in, even in some of the bedrooms, you can look actually out onto the pitch, watch the match when they're playing, you know. But also then you have the Marshall Arena, which is next door connected. Hmm. And that's sort of an indoor arena, a little bit smaller than our O2, or the Tree Arena, as it is now known. And that's where they can hold the snooker, and they're holding the darts there as well. And they've been holding boxing as well there. So, you know, it's very efficient, and it's just great to stage these events, because there's so many barriers, so many difficulties to actually stage these events. Mm. And of course, things are changing all the time with government guidelines as well. So we're just delighted that these snooker tournaments can go ahead, you know.
Have you noticed, is anyone dealing with it better than others? I'm thinking about the form of the players and how they're reacting to the crowds. And, like, I mean, even, you know, in the last tournament, it kind of didn't go to form in the sense that you felt it would be a different final to what it was.
Yeah.
Is it easier for some players because there's less pressure there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, well, the crowd adds the atmosphere, it adds the pressure because you're playing in front of people. And when there's nobody there, of course, the less players, the lower sort of
lower ranked
players, can have an advantage slightly because they wouldn't be used, they'd be more used to not many people watching them. Whereas the top players have big crowds all the time. So when there's nobody there, it's less pressure for them, even though it's on TV or whatever. But it's less pressure for them that there's no people there. The atmosphere is not the same. So they have a chance to turn over a lot of the players. And you saw Martin Gould, which was a lovely story, really. You know, he sort of battled depression, was on the verge of giving the game up, nearly lost his tour card, but for the run that he had in the World Championship there, just gone.
Yeah.
And he's come back and got to the final, beat John Higgins along the way and a few other great players and got to the final. So it's a really good, that's a really sort of good story for him that he's able to battle that, come through it, talk about it, be open about it, get some help. Yeah. And it certainly helped him, and he's back playing to somewhere near his best snooker. So that was a real good feel good story from the last tournament.
Absolutely. Okay, give us your predictions. Who do you think is going to go well in this? Apart from yourself,
apart from myself, Fergal O'Brien in the final. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I've been practicing with Jimmy White, as I said. Don't be surprised if he has a little run in it because he's been practicing quite hard and playing really, really well.
Yeah.
I suppose you'd have to go with the likes of O'Sullivan and Trump, you know, Mark Selby, who won the last one. But again, you know, if you found somebody in there, someone like a Corin Wilson could come through, or even someone like, you know, a 50 or 100th one shot that you know has a bit of form, who's played well maybe in the World Championship or in the previous tournament, then they might be worth a little each way shout out, you know, as well. Someone like Yan Bingtao, maybe, another Chinese boy who's just in the broken into the top 16. He could be due a good run in one of these tournaments as well.
Excellent stuff. Okay, listen, Ken, sorry about all the messing around with
not at all,
phone calls and
always
everything
a pleasure,
else.
Yeah, I miss being there with you. I must say, looking at your face, like, I know it's not that pretty, but I do miss looking at you on a Saturday morning.
Well, that's a long time since someone said that to me, Ken, I can tell you. thanks for the compliment.
No problem.
All right, bud. Talk to you soon.
Cheers, pal.
Take care. All the best. I wasn't expecting that now. He misses me. There you go. Time to get to rugby slightly later than we had anticipated, but still, he's managed to hang on for us, which I'm very grateful for. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good, thanks, Reddy. How are things?
I'm very well, thanks. Will Slattery of The Independent and, of course, the Left Wing podcast joining me for the rugby. And it's a fairly packed rugby calendar this weekend as well, and plenty going on. And we're only around the corner as well, of course, from the, if it goes ahead, please God, the final stages of last year's or this year's or I don't know what year's Six Nation at this stage where we are. But so the Pro 14 is taking precedent this weekend. And all four provinces in action today.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, it's funny, the first time in a long time I've woken up on a Saturday with a pep in my step over Pro 14 rugby. But that's what last weekend did for me, especially the Saturday games. You know, we touched on last week. It was locked and loaded teams pretty much across the board. I mean, you had the Scarlet Munster game and the Connacht Glasgow game, which really did feel like big, you know, engaging league clashes with a lot of star names on both sides. And, you know, another thing we touched on was how important these opening games could be for Connacht and Munster to launch their seasons. Connacht getting that really impressive win over Glasgow. Munster, who for about an hour really didn't look at the race, and more accuracy dug out this win we've seen them do time and time again. Ben Healy kicking a couple of clutch kicks at the end. He's obviously starting today again against Edinburgh, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes. There's a couple of young players there from Munster again, so it's really exciting. And another interesting day today with a couple of good games, a few really strong teams put out again. So the league has got off on a good footing now. It's just, I guess, a pity that Leinster, as the champions, have played the Dragons last weekend and Treviso this weekend. But besides that, a lot of the other clashes have been competitive with strong teams on both sides.
Absolutely. And also, it's not just in the sense of our own provinces. I mean, there was results like, you know, the Ospreys result, for example. Even the Dragons, I know they didn't get there the first week, but they did last night, and they look like a stronger force. And, you know, I was saying it to you, I remember well, that I'm a bit concerned about the league. I know we've reduced it down to 12 teams for this period of time, but that the quality wasn't there. But certainly the quality upped last weekend, I felt.
Yeah, and like, I know the Dragons were only playing Zebre last night, but they got a bonus point win, and they are in the Champions Cup this year. I know, obviously, they did finish, I think, behind the Cheetahs, but they qualified to end up the South African teams not being allowed. There's no doubt Dean Ryan has made strides there. Obviously, you know, we tend to judge them when they come over and play Leinster and Munster, and obviously they're going to get hosed in those games.
Yeah.
But away from those, they picked up a lot of impressive wins last year. They got to the quarterfinals of the Challenge Cup as well, which is nothing to sneeze at for a team who's coming from a low base. If you look through the team sheet, as I think we said last week again, there's a lot of names that will be very familiar to a lot of people. Even Jamie Roberts last night, I think he's about 34, 35 at this stage. He put in a big shift last night. They got that win. And as you said, the Ospreys probably had the most impressive victory of anyone in round one, considering where they were coming from. They had a bit of a nightmare year last year.
Exactly.
But they got a really impressive away scalp against Edinburgh. And it's actually funny, they're playing Ulster today. They're at home. They're 4-point favourites, so they're getting a lot of respect from the bookmakers anyway.
Yeah.
I think that might be a little generous personally, but it'll be an interesting gauge of where they're at after last weekend's win.
Yeah, it will indeed. And as you said, I was impressed, you know, because they have been a squad that have been very disappointing in recent years. And I just felt that they had something about them again, which was good.
Yeah, sorry, I'll go on the Ospreys there again. Like, you know, you look back to the start of last season during the World Cup period. I think they played 3 games in Ireland in the opening 5 weeks and conceded, I think, over 50 in all 3 or close to it. But they had a humongous injury list at the time. They, you know, that Dan Liddy had to play in the second row. And it kind of coloured their season from the off in a negative way. I know Alan Clark maybe wasn't the most popular man there either by the end of it. And when the season gets off to a bad start like that with a few drubbings, it can probably be hard to get the morale back. You know, Gareth Danscombe, their big marquee signing, is facing another year on the sidelines from a knee injury. He's not going to play, I don't think, at all this season. So they've been hamstrung in a lot of respects by a few different things. But this year, hopefully, getting that positive result from the off puts them in a good place. And yeah, as I said, I'm really interested to see if they can back it up against Ulster today.
Absolutely. Yeah, that'll be an interesting one to watch. Now, Munster, they left it late last week, but, you know, we both spoke about it, the importance of them getting off to a good start. I think it was fair to say that we felt that Johan van Graan was under pressure. There were people waiting in the wings that have a lot of... you know, see a very strong CVs behind them. So he needed to get off to goodwill. He's talked about backing the younger players. He got there. They left it late. Okay, they, you know, they were down to 14 men, but it was a good victory away from home.
It was. It's a funny one. Like, you know, in the early stages, they got a ball in the 22. They were kind of mauling it into the 22, and then Craig Casey box kicked it. And I was just thinking, my Lord, that is absolutely criminal. Like, more of the same kind of whatever box kicking could win back the ball at around halfway. Passing into 22 is not something that you should be doing. But anyway, they kicked on. And even at the hour mark, I wasn't really impressed with how they were playing. They were giving away a lot of kick-out penalties. The referee was quite fussy. But the character they showed was mildly impressive. But interestingly, I think today, he has kind of backed youth a little more. And he's brought in Alex McHenry at 13. John Hodnett, a guy I touched on last week, is on the bench. So there is a bit of more youthful flavour to it. Craig Casey and Ben Healy are starting at 9 and 10, which would be an interesting... you know, resumption of their partnership they had for Ireland under 20s last year. And Edinburgh, again, have picked their strongest team too. So this will be a really good test for Munster. He's kind of transitioned a couple of young guys in with still a quite an experienced core, particularly in the pack. So this will be a very tough game for them, actually. And it'll be an important win to get, because you don't want to lose the momentum of last week by going down at home in Thomond Park. So I'll be really interested to see how some of the young guys step up, and in particular how Ben Healy handles kind of managing a game from the off. Obviously, he did really well to win that game last week, but in a sense, it was a shot to nothing. They were down by 10 points. They had a man sent off by that stage as well, so he could play a bit freely. This time, he'll have to lead from the off. He'll have to manage the game. I expect it'll be a close game, and it'll require him to be very good in some pressure situations again. So I'm really interested to see how he kind of copes with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, certainly one to watch. And at home, a little bit more pressure, I think, to put in a performance and get the result. Now, Connacht We both again said last week the importance of that starting game. I felt kind of confident. I knew it was going to be a tough game for them, but I did feel confident that they were going to get a result last week, and they didn't let us down. It was a very good result.
It was a great result, and Edinburgh picked a strong team. They came to play. They were very staged for it. Glasgow looked on top, but kind of hit them with a really good third quarter blitz to get on top. And it actually really reminded me of the year they won the league. They played Glasgow twice in the last couple of weeks, both the sports grounds, both very close victories that day. There was a sense of, you know, something happening. And there's a couple of parts of this Connacht team that really interest me. Alex Wooten on the wing had another really good game. His little grubber kicked through, set up on the Aki's try, which ultimately proved decisive. He's a man who, after starting a Champions Cup semi-final against Rossi 92 for Munster a couple of years ago and not going very well, kind of fell off the map. And it was interesting. I know Keane Tracy talked to him in the Irish Independent earlier in the week, and he was just saying that he really didn't feel like he got a shot the last couple of years at Munster through injury and through maybe the coach just not really maybe backing him any longer. It's been interesting to see how he's really come out completely rejuvenated and has been one of their key men. And like similarly, we kind of talked about how impressive Bundy Aki and Kieran Marmion were in that win over Ulster once rugby resumed. There had been a long layoff, but they both looked really sharp again. And it's no surprise Kieran Marmion has been put into the Ireland squad off the back of it. So today is an interesting game, though, because Cardiff, a very strong team at home, backline-wise anyway. You know, you have Josh Adams, you have the two guys in the centre, Lilo and Haholo. You know, there's some talent there. This is the game that I feel like Connacht could traditionally let slip over the last couple of years since they won the league. They'd have a good result to sports ground, and they might just let an away win slip. A win today will really cement them as a team this season that is going somewhere.
Absolutely, and they've every opportunity to do that and possibility of doing that as well. Okay, the other big news this week, of course, was the announcement by Andy Farrell of the 35-man squad. Interesting, no question, you know, with the coach coming in, thinking towards the future, all the pressure being put on him to look towards the future, to pick on form, all these terms that are put out there. There seems to be quite a bit of youth in the squad that he's picked, and he seems to be looking at form to pick it as well.
Well, yeah, he's looking at very recent form. For me, the big thing from the squad is definitely John Tooney's kind of fall from grace.
Absolutely.
If you look back to, obviously, they're playing Italy, in 2 weeks' time. That was the fixture that was meant to take place before COVID. Tooney was going to start that game. At that stage, he was in the running for European Player of the Year, Pro 14 Player of the Year. He was instrumental in all of Ulster's big wins. You know, people, remember, were throwing their hands up when Conor Murray got the nod for the first two Six Nations games. And rightly so, because Tooney was playing out of his skin. But now, a couple of subpar performances later, he misses Ulster's biggest game since 2013, that final when he was on the bench. Now he's not even in the Ireland squad. And I suppose you can say he's picking on form. Jameson Gibson-Park has been really, really good for Leinster. Ironically, he's in the squad ahead of Luke McGrath, who starts ahead of him for Leinster. Kieran Mellamy is in the squad as well. But Conor Murray's there too, and I don't think anyone could argue that Murray has been better than Tooney over the last couple of years. A couple of years is strong. I misspoke there. But the funny thing is, when you know, Reggie, you haven't been in Ireland squads, there's certain players who have credit in the bank, and it would take a huge drop in form for someone like Conor Murray to not even be in a squad. So that kind of stood out for me. And then besides that, I guess, you know, the youth that you referred to, the six uncapped players in the squads, Shane Daly, Hugo Keane, these are guys who've had really good stats for the season, and justifiably are there in the squad. Will Connor's another one. And then I suppose Brian Baird is someone I think everyone's very excited to see in an Ireland jersey. He's starting alongside James Ryan for the first time in a Leinster jersey today in Treviso. That could well be the Ireland second row partnership for the next 10 years.
It could well be, is right. I'd have to agree with you. I thought it was a bold selection, let's say. I don't know. Cooney, I don't know. Should he have been given a bit more of an opportunity, though? You know, I mean, like, he kind of didn't get much of a chance to prove himself. And I don't know if his form has dipped that badly.
Yeah, that's completely valid. Like, I know Gibson Park has been good, but realistically, Gibson Park is playing in Leinster Park, or behind Leinster Park, that is destroying, you know, 80% of the packs they're playing. He's getting, like, pristine service from football all the time. And to be fair, he's really good, snappy delivery. He gets a lot of pace off the bench. Kieran Marmion has played really well in those two games, but is that enough to get him in ahead of John Cooney? To be fair, I think if Marmion was admitted and Cooney was included, people might have been questioning. It's just really harsh on John Cooney. It's just, for a man who, over the last 2 years, since he joined Ulster two seasons, has been probably the best club player in Ireland. And I just, his career has been like kind of a litany of these moments where he's looked to get in. He missed the World Cup squad as well, remember, which everyone thought was quite harsh at the time too, even though he was playing out of his skin. He didn't really get much of a run in those warm-up games. And, you know, he's not a young man in rugby terms either. I think he's 30 now. So it's just an unfortunate situation. I think there hasn't been anyone as hard done by in terms of a couple of bad performances post-lockdown. And now he just seems to be, at least fourth choice, possibly fifth choice, you know, with Luke McGrath as well. So, yeah, it's an interesting call. Ultimately, I don't know if it'll bifurcate that badly, but it's just more for Cooney that I feel bad for.
Yeah, I hear you. Let's have a look at the forwards then and where they've gone with that. So the likes of Will Connors, of course, who's uncapped, getting included in the squad. Kellen Dorris, who has a couple of caps but is still relatively inexperienced. And then you're looking at Ryan Baird, of course, who is uncapped but many feel is the almost locked on to become the next Irish second row. He's got a very high reputation. So there's no doubt there's in the back row the competition is just going up and up and up.
Yeah, just another word on Ryan Baird, just in terms of for people who mightn't be that familiar with him. You know, it was telling that the impact he made off the bench against Saracens, he was probably the forward who took it to them the most. He like ripped the ball out of Billy Bonapolo's hands, made a couple of big carries as well. That was a game when he's a 21-year-old coming in against probably the most grizzled, established pack European rugby has seen in the last 10 years, and he did not look out of place. And actually, he was probably Leinster forward, along with Caelan Dorris, who had the most purchase in the physical exchanges. So I'm excited to see him play. You know, he'll probably play against Italy. You know, the Autumn Cup might be interesting. Would you throw him in against England in some capacity? I'd be open to seeing that. And then, as you say, in the back row, it'll be interesting more to see the starting back row when it all shakes out in terms of who's the strongest. Obviously, Caelan Dorris will be in there, you'd think, in some shape or form. Will Connors is a man who's in form. CJ Stander is very established in the back row as well. Would he play at 8 or 6? I'd say he'll probably be in the starting team. Peter Armani is someone I think could be on the outside looking in. He mightn't even make it 23 when Van der Fleer probably offers a little more impact off the bench. In particular, I think for Leinster, he was very effective in that role so far this season with Connor starting and Van der Fleer coming in relief. O'Mahony could be the guy who's maybe left out of the shuffle there. It's an interesting one, as you say. There is a lot of competition. It's hard to know exactly what way Farrell will treat these games. We still have a chance of winning the Six Nations. Yeah. Funnily enough, so he might go all guns blazing for those two, but the Autumn Cup, perhaps a more experimental lineup.
Like the natural, or not natural, but I suppose the most form 8 would be looking at Conan at 8. And then that would be moving Stander to, you know, a blindside, you know, role or whatever. But I don't know. I just don't know what way you can move that around with Connors. And like you got an open side like Van der Fleer who can go and pilfer ball for you at will. It's getting very narrow in that
back row. If I had to make a call of it now, I suspect the starting back row will be Stander and Dorris at 8 or 6. He might go Stander 8, Dorris 6, or vice versa, and Will Connors at 7 with Josh Van der Fleer as a substitute back row player with Conan and O'Mahony missing the match day squad. That would be my prediction now if I have to go with it. Well, I guess it depends on which way he wants. With France coming down the track the following week, he might select a certain back row for the Italy game with an eye on maybe putting a bit more heft in the back row for France. It's hard to know, but that will be the way I'm looking at the moment.
Yeah.
Very tight calls, and to leave out someone like Peter O'Mahony, you know, a stalwart of Irish rugby, will be big, but I think at the moment it probably wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, okay, it's going to be very, very interesting. Really looking forward to see which way that unfolds. I suppose final word then would go to Madigan. You know, he came back here for a reason. Some people might argue that Jack Carthy's form, if you're going to be picking on form, hasn't been all that hot of late, but at the same time, we haven't really seen much of Madigan either. It's just a little bit too early for him.
Yeah, big time. This is a big game for him today. Like, he's starting out half. They're going to the Ospreys. They're 4-point underdogs for a team that got to the Pro 14 final and a Champions Cup quarter final. If they have designs on getting back to that top table, this is a game they should be winning. You can't afford to let slip a game against the Ospreys, as impressive as they were against Edinburgh last weekend. Because if you look through their team sheet, it's not stacked with the Welsh internationals. Obviously, you have Alan Wynne-Jones involved, I think. But you know, in the background in particular, it's a fairly, you know,
There's no big stars in that back line. So Madigan, this is a big test for him today to go away from home. Like, it's funny, kind of like Ben Healy, when Madigan kicked those penalties to win that game against Edinburgh, it was kind of a shock to nothing. They were down by a good bit. They were great pressure kicks. But now again, it's a different role. He has to go. He has to lead the team, drive them around the pitch, dig out a tough away win against a team who's confident. That will show a big kind of kick mark in his column. Because since he's come back, he's only really played 15 starts. He hasn't really started that many huge matches. He started once against Leinster in a game where they lost, and Leinster had a second string team out. This will be a really good test where he's at, having come back. It'll take him another while to get into an Ireland squad, and he'll have to be playing regularly as well, which at the moment he hasn't really done. So that's why, again, today's game will be very interesting in that regard.
Absolutely. Will, as always, been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for all of that information. We'll catch up with you again very shortly.
Cheers, Roddy. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. That's Will Slattery there of the Irish Independent and of the Left Wing podcast as well, giving us all of the latest rugby info, and there's plenty going on. Time to turn our attention to football now. Delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley. Morning, Al. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you? Are you okay?
Doing good. Thanks. Doing very well indeed. Bit of a disappointing week all around it's been in some cases, but then we had good news last night and Bowes securing Europe. I'm going to come to you in a minute, but first of all, I do want to just listen to what Keith Long had to say after that win against Cork.
We're joined here by a smiling Keith Long at Daly Mount Park, and why wouldn't he? Because his team has recorded a comfortable 3-0 home win over basement side Cork City.
Yeah, we comfortable win, to be fair, Declan, and that's no disrespect to Cork, but you know, we got ahead in the game. We scored two really good goals in the first half, and probably should have had a goal, two more maybe. Second half we got the tour goal, and we asked the players at halftime, to be fair, to try and get the next goal and see if we could increase our lead, and we were able to do that. Unfortunately, we couldn't add to it. The game became a little bit scrappy second half with the amount of changes that happened in the game, and I suppose with conditions, the pitch cutting up a little bit and being a little bit heavy. But fantastic for the boys, great achievement for them to qualify for Europe, and you know, second year in a row, and that was our primary objective when we started the campaign. And you know, they delivered upon that tonight with three games to spare. So you know, I'm really pleased for the boys. Yes, it's been a difficult, disjointed season, but their application over lockdown was first class. They worked really, really hard, and they got the rewards tonight for that. And yeah, we've got three games left to play in the league. We've got a quarter final of a cup, which is a really tough challenge for us. We've got to go to Dundalk next week as well. So you know, we want to try and finish the season strongly and finish, you know, as high up the table as we possibly can. So you know, we're in second position, and yes, we have a game or two in hand over other teams.
Talk to us now about the element of satisfaction for you personally, as well as the group, having achieved Europe back to back, haven't been so many years without it previously, and have those games to spare as well.
I'm proud of what they've achieved, because they're the ones that you know, have to commit to the work. They're the ones that have to, you know, cross the line, put themselves on their bodies on the line every week for us. You know, it's fantastic reward for the club and for the group to like you said, get into Europe back to back. It's very, very different this time round, because the supporters aren't here to celebrate with us. But you know, we want to evolve and continue to develop and grow as a group. And you know, like I said, it was our primary aim to get into Europe this season. We've achieved that now. You know, the team have done excellently well. We're delighted with them. Like I said, if we can retain them, if we can try and continue to grow, we do have high hopes for the group. If we can add to it wisely, and you know, we're young. You know, we train at night. The team are in as much as the full time teams are in, but there's a significant difference is that, you know, the boys come in at night time. They have, a lot of them have to do a day's work. You know, in terms of recovery, they get less time to recover because they have to go to work the following day, and I don't think that can be underestimated. So you know, it's great for the club, great for the players, because they worked ever so hard. We're delighted to work with this group, because they're a great group to be around and to work with.
Absolutely, and a great group, and a great result, and a great bit of news considering, you know, it has been a tough week with that result on Thursday night. So fair play to them.
Bowes have been brilliant over a long period of time now, Reggie. Over that, as Keith said, they've qualified for Europe now 2 years in a row. But even prior to that, Keith was building towards, I suppose, qualification for Europe and trying to get to the top end of the table and try and challenge Shamrock Rovers or Dundalk, whoever it was at the top. So they've done remarkably well. And the fact that it has been so disjointed this season, I think he mentioned it there, after lockdown, that was the time when they really kind of stood up, because as soon as they came back, I think they won 4 or 5 games on the trot. And that was, I suppose, the period where they set themselves apart from the rest. And at one stage, they were really close challengers to Shamrock Rovers. When they went up to Tallaght to play them, I think there was only 5 points in it, Reggie. And it was looking like it may go all the way, but obviously Shamrock Rovers beat them, and I know Keith was very disappointed with the performance on the day against Shamrock Rovers, so that kind of put the title hopes aside, but they still carried on and obviously achieved their goal of getting into Europe. So for a club working off a part-time budget, even though Keith is very, very professional in his approach, and obviously Trevor is with him as well, and he mentioned also about they're in every evening and they're very, very professional. They are effectively a part-time outfit and a part-time budget with lads working on also. To qualify for Europe 2 years on the trot, as I say, with the resources, he's done an unbelievable job at Bohemians, Keith.
Absolutely, yeah. Long may it continue. I'm just reading as well this morning that Dundalk are looking at the possibility of moving their Europa League fixtures to Windsor Park. They're deep in negotiations about that. That's interesting.
I saw that, Reggie, myself, and I haven't actually got, I suppose, a full report on it or the reasons as to why, but... I only saw the headline last night myself, and I was wondering as to why I'm not sure.
I'll tell you what it's saying is that basically Dundalk are a bit exacerbated by the IRFU's stubbornness in refusing them to allow their stage opening Europe qualifier against Molde at the Aviva Stadium in October 22nd. It says here. With the Independent that the Dundalk were actually refused permission to play at the Aviva because the RFU demanded it was used solely for a kicking session for Andy Farrell's side. So that's interesting.
Yeah, well, obviously there's a row breaking out there then, if that's the case, because I saw that Dundalk were due to play their first game in Tala in the first round of the group stages against Molde and then all the other games in the Aviva. So if it's because of that, if there was a match on, I'd say fair enough. If it's a kicking session, I'm not so sure. But then... the IRFU have rights to the ground.
I know.
So I'm sure they'll take precedence on that. But as I say, surely something like that can be ironed out without them going bullheaded now, thinking we'll have to change the whole thing and go and play in Windsor Park or whatever the case may be. So hopefully it'll be ironed out. It's all the one really though, Reggie, because I suppose the fans can't get into the ground.
Yeah.
But if you're having to cross over the border to play, I don't think that sits well maybe with the Dundalk fans and the Dundalk people as well. Like, if they're not going to play in Dundalk, they all said it was going to be the Aviva, possibly Tala if that's the case, and they have played European games in Tala before, in the last time during the group.
Yeah, well, they did announce that this week, in fact, Dundalk did announce that the clash with the Norwegians would take place in Tala, and the games against Arsenal and Rapid Vienna being held at the Aviva. And as a result, the UEFA officials were over on a site visit yesterday to the two prospective venues as part of their own preparations, but Dundalk are in the process of trying to figure out if it would be possible to move all three of the games north of the border instead. So
yeah, and it comes back to Reggie again, and this is my argument with Dundalk and the investors there, and they've had ample opportunity now with the amount of money that they've won over the years and stuff. They have to do up the ground and put something into the ground, because here we are in a situation again now. Same thing happened 4 years ago. The ground wasn't fit for purpose and they had to go and play the games at Tala. Here we are now in 2020. Same situation. The ground is nowhere near fit for purpose and they're having to travel to either the Aviva, Tala or now Windsor Park. So if them investors are serious about being in Dundalk for the long term, they need to put some money or put something into the ground and try and do it up a bit, because as we've said for many times, as good and all as the team has been over a number of years, the ground is a disgrace.
Well, that's it. Put the money where their mouth is. Okay, look, Thursday night was hugely disappointing. Obviously, losing on penalties is a horrible way to go out. But overall, I know you feel strongly. I've seen your tweets that support has to be there for Stephen Kenny. It was a good performance from Ireland.
Oh, absolutely, Reggie. Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, kind of my outlook on this all week really was, it was unfortunate that just in Stephen's third game that it happened to be such an important game and a huge game, and obviously one that we all wanted to win and get us to the Euros, and we all know the excitement and the financial return it would have brought to the country. But this game was never going to define Stephen, and it shouldn't either. It's only his third game in charge. You add in obviously the environment we're living with at the moment, and you look at the Nations League games, the lack of preparation he had for them, and also the players who were in pre-season, which were obviously disappointing. But I had no issue with them whatsoever, because I knew things once he got closer with the players and started to build up relationships that things would of course get better. Now that the players were a lot fitter, you look at the performance that he turned in, that the squad turned in obviously against Slovakia, and it was so much better, so much promising, so much kind of optimism now around the squad and around the team. And if you're to think, Reggie, if it's another 6 months down the line or a year down the line and he spends so much more time with them and that message is getting across, even more so, imagine the improvements that we can make. So it was never going to define him. Of course, it was disappointing. And don't let for 1 minute think Stephen is happy with just that we play football and it's a good performance. He wants to win more than anybody.
Did you think the players seemed to play with a little bit more freedom or something? They just seemed to be...
Absolutely, Reggie. And the big thing about it as well, and this is why it hasn't come as a surprise to me, because obviously I know Stephen and we watched him over a number of years and his approach, whereas other fans who were maybe a bit sceptical, they've seen a glimpse of exactly what it's going to be like and that it's going to get better. Now, that's not to say, oh, it's all about playing football and not getting the results. Of course, results matter. And they will matter when we go forward. But we will play with that intention and that freedom and that belief that we're going out to try and actually with a structured plan in place, because that's what we've seen the other night. There was a bit of cohesion about the team. There was a plan in place. There was a belief amongst the players. Stephen allows them to express themselves. Obviously, the only thing we lacked was the goal, but we created enough chances in the game to get the goal. Unfortunately, we didn't take them. But that will come in time as well, Reggie. So,
who stood out most to you?
I felt Alan Brown played really well when he came on, and he's put himself into the mix, because despite it being a good performance, don't get me wrong, there's areas that need tweaking and improving. I think the midfield area is going to be a problem for Stephen. I thought Conor Horan played really, really well. James McCarthy, I'm just not so sure in terms of the role that Stephen is asking him to play, because he plays a completely different game at club level. And whether he's going to change now, I'm not so sure. Hendrick as well, where's his best position? He started off as the attacking midfielder, almost in a 10 role, and he dropped back then alongside Conor Horan and done okay. But again, I feel a little bit sorry for him because he's always moved around. He can never nail down a position. McGoldrick does brilliant for us, and all his great work is done across the halfway line and so much deeper to where you want him, and that's why he scores so few goals. Connolly was a massive miss, Reggie, because he could have had him alongside McGoldrick and he would have been a brilliant foil for him, because he would have been a threat in behind. So there's definitely areas to tweak. Stephen will know that. Obviously, it's the next two games to work on as well. But as for going forward and in the future, you look at the way we played the other in terms of how we passed the ball and looked to pass the ball and wanted to get on the ball and play. And that's only going to get better in time.
Absolutely, yeah, no doubt about it. Well, let's hope that he is given the time. No doubt he will be. Who have you got on Colley's call this week?
We're hoping to have Wes Hoolihan, but we're waiting to see, Reggie. He's not great with the old interviews and the media stuff.
and he's heard what you lads are like.
We're trying to hoodwink him in and tell him no one to be listening.
Very good. Okay, listen, as always, great chatting to you. Hopefully you will get Wes. I look forward to hearing that.
Thanks, Reggie.
Thanks a lot. That's Alan Colley there. Of course, Colley's Call is podcast. Well worth a listen if you get a chance. So that's all we've got time for this week on the show. Thank you very much for listening to us here on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8. With thanks to InsureMyVan.ie, I want to thank our producers, Paul Morris and Blaine O'Hara. We'll be back again next Saturday. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.